This is our number
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
My honey, we always have to be so cool. I love it when you hear what 50-year-olds on the Seattle City Council consider cool. Mud honey. Yeah. That's hip. Okay. They never adopted my name for the Seattle Tunnel that had Bertha drilling the hole. I suggested, because we predicted everything correctly about that tunnel, I suggested they call it the Dory Hole. But they never adopted that either. Darn it. I can't get on the map, for crying out loud. All right, let's get to the Fast 15. We have a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And as you just heard in Aaron's newscast, Governor Inslee has rolled back three counties from Phase 3, which was statewide. But now Pierce, Cowlitz, and Whitman counties have been rolled back to Phase 2. And this, once again, could be absolutely devastating for the restaurants in those counties. Places of worship are going to go from 50% to 25% capacity. And why? Well, they say that those counties are over the metrics of hospitalizations and people who have tested positive. But the day before, they said that that's, which was Friday, they said, yeah, you have to fail both those measures. The day before, Thursday, they said if a county fails in either of those measures, they'll get rolled back. And then it turns out a lot of the state was going to get rolled back. And so they go, okay, well, now it's got to be both of those measures, which again just proves that they are doing nothing based on scientific data, fact, reasoning. They're just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And for the businesses in those three counties, like I said, they don't know which way to spin because Governor Inslee has thrown out so much absolute nonsense at the business community. Down in Pierce County, we have a story up at mynorthwest.com. The Pierce County executive, Bruce Dammeyer, he says this is going to be devastating to their county. He said, yeah, we've vaccinated a lot of seniors. Our hospital capacity is fine. He says that they did not get 55,000 doses of vaccine that they were counting on, and still they've done really well. But for all of these businesses and all of these workers who are going to pay a steep price, some may lose their companies that they've put all their blood, sweat, and tears into. Some employees are going to lose their jobs, and all for the capriciousness of Jay Inslee, who didn't even have a press conference to announce this yesterday. He just sent out a press release, didn't even face a media that's really, really goes easy on him. But they might have asked a tough question about rolling back these counties, but he didn't. He's now just sending out press releases that dramatically change and affect people's lives. And so to all the businesses, all the workers who are affected, and if you are in that category in those three counties, Pierce, Cowlitz, Whitman, shoot me a text. Let me know what this means for you, how this affects you. And I'll share some of your stories later on this afternoon. But text me at 98973. That's 98973. Up next in the big lead. So it's fascinating. We haven't heard back from this guy yet, Chris, have we? The guy we were trying to get on for this next story?
No, he knows we want to speak with him, but we haven't heard back.
Okay. All right. So what was your take on this? Do you think he deserved a bigger reward? By the way, this is Chris Martin, the ace bullpen reliever of Cairo Radio. Nicole's out sick today.
No, I don't think he deserves a reward for doing the right thing. No, I don't think he deserves anything. I mean, but it should be enough for to have the guy be effusive and say, thank you so much for, you know, saving me.
Well, and I've told this story before about, oh gosh, it's a long time ago. My wife, three girls, and I, our girls were probably 6, 7, and 10, maybe. We went to Hawaii, and one night we were going to go get some ice cream. So we walked from our hotel to this little business area that had an ice cream shop. And as we were walking, my middle daughter, who again, about 7 years old, she sees a wallet laying in the parking strip next to the street on which we were walking. And she picked it up, and she goes, look at this, Dad. And she handed it to me. And it had about $300 in it. It was an older man who had lost it. I saw the driver's license, and I was trying to think. And it also had a card because he had a joint replacement that would get him on the airplanes when it was, you know, less common to have a joint replacement. And I was also worried about, you know, if they had 300 cash, did they, and the ATM card was in the wallet. I didn't know how he was going to get home. So we're trying to think, and there's a little, no offense to for hire security guards, but there's kind of a rent-a-cop security guard near these ice cream shops. And one of my girls said, should we give it to that man? Honestly, I didn't think it would ever get out of the hands of that guy. I didn't trust. And so I'm trying to think, well, I could call all the major hotels near this, where this was, and see if there's a man by that name registered. And I'm just thinking and thinking and thinking. So we went and we got our ice cream, and we're walking out of the ice cream shop, and lo and behold, I see an older couple, and they're looking in the planning strip to the left side of the sidewalk and the parking strip to the right, and they're just looking and looking. I go, excuse me, did you lose something? He said, yeah, I lost my wallet. And, you know, I opened it up and I said, well, can you tell me your address? I just want to make sure this is you. And he gave me his address. And I said, here you go, sir. My daughter found it. And they were so nice and so gracious. And, you know, all our girls had an ice cream cone. And the guy says, oh, let me buy your ice cream. And he pulls out a $20 bill. I said, you know, both my wife and I. Said, absolutely not. We were going to get this ice cream anyway. He goes, oh, please, I would really love to buy this for your family. And I go, no. We want our girls to do the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. And we said, just the fact that you're so happy to get this back, that's our reward. That's all we need. We didn't need you to buy our ice cream. And so it was really sweet. And I'm so glad the guy was there and that we found his wallet. Okay, the reason I bring all this up is because there's a story that Nicole Brodeur did in the Seattle Times that a guy named Steve Harrison was going to Costco near Issaquah a couple weeks ago. And he saw some papers fluttering in the road. So he pulled over to investigate. It was stacks of $100 bills. One after another. Some were small stacks, some were large stacks. And so he grabbed all the money, and then he found a wallet with a driver's license, with the name and address of the guy who must have lost the money. And so this guy drove to Costco, pulled into the parking space, counted up the money, $10,003. It's what he found in the road. So he got back home, called a neighbor, asked the neighbor, do you know the owner of the wallet? A guy named Michael King. He goes, yeah, I know him. Keep the money. The friend laughed. And then the guy who found it couldn't do that. So he asked his friend to call the guy with the wallet. And the guy didn't even know it was missing. He had put it on the bumper of his truck and drove off. He'd gotten all that cash for some business transaction. And so the guy who found the wallet got hold of the guy who lost the wallet. He said, quote, he knew I was the guy saving his ass. And the guy who got it back wasn't terribly thankful, they said. He was embarrassed more than anything. He said, thank you, but I cannot give you any reward right off the bat. And the guy found the wallet, said, okay, well, let's just get this over with. And so he gave the guy the wallet, and the guy gave Harrison a jar of homemade applesauce as his reward for finding the wallet. And then the question that was asked in the Seattle Times, is a jar of applesauce proper thanks for correcting a $10,000 mistake? And the answer is nothing is necessary for doing the right thing, for returning somebody's money to them. And I know most of you feel that way and agree with that. I'm just amazed that there are so many people. I should have given them at least $100 finder fee. And all this, I'm thinking, no. Just do the right thing. Don't expect anything in return. Your return comes from being a good human. So, anyway, it's an interesting story. I'm trying to get a hold of the guy who found the $10,000. And as Chris just said, he has our info if he wants to get back to us. So we'll see if we can track him down. Okay, next in the Fastest 15. Oh, by the way, I'd love to hear from you on that one, too. Do you think a jar of applesauce is proper compensation for returning $10,000? Oh, you got to be kidding me. They're talking about another round of welfare checks going out in this country. The push is on for full-on socialism. And in Congress, they're now talking about a fourth round of what they call stimulus, which is just sending out $1,400 checks to everyone who qualifies, which is tens of millions of people. They've already sent $1,200 in round one, $600 round two, $1,400 in round three. So most people have gotten $3,200. And the thing about this is, it's not free money. My kids, my grandchildren, they're going to have to pay for this when the tab comes due. And I am all for a safety net for people who have been financially devastated by the COVID economy. But they're sending it to my daughters who have managed to all stay employed and have good jobs through all of this. And it doesn't make any sense to me. But it is the push. It is full-on attempt to just instill an absolute welfare mentality on everybody in our country. And, you know, we're going back to the Obama days where we had more than 40 million people on welfare, on food stamps. They greatly expanded welfare under Obama. And then Donald Trump comes along and he says, hey, you know what? It'd be better if these people took care of themselves. So he lowered taxes, lowered regulation, and got unemployment to a record low level for almost every demographic, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, you name it. Women, unemployment, all-time record lows. More people are working. More people are taking care of themselves. More people have sovereignty over their own life. And now we're getting back to the welfare mentality. Let's just send the money, put it on our nation's tab, and all of our kids get to pay for it. It's going to cripple us, man. This $27 trillion in debt is going to absolutely cripple us. Okay, next up in the Fastest 15, as we told you late last week, and I'm trying to get an answer on what this means in our state, but the CDC says youth sports and extracurricular activities should be limited. This is Rochelle Walensky, the director of the CDC.
We're hearing reports of clusters of cases associated with daycare centers and youth sports. In areas of substantial or high community transmission, CDC guidance specifically suggests refraining from youth sports that are not outside and cannot be conducted at least 6 feet apart.
Okay, refrain from youth sports that are not outside and cannot be 6 feet apart. Well, basketball is not outside. And you cannot stay 6 feet apart. Or if you do, defensively, you won't play for me. Now you get right up in the face, chest to chest with them. Put the most aggressive defense imaginable. So we have not yet heard from the state of Washington. Because they moved basketball, high school basketball, to the final season in the springtime. Thinking that things would be freed up. But now, in this all-out effort to control our kids, And, you know, I've mentioned this before. I've had a couple of teams. My first trophy team at state, got fourth in state, had five seniors. And I'd coached a couple of those girls since kindergarten. I got the high school job when they got to ninth grade. So I coached a couple of those girls for 13 years, most of them since elementary school, had five seniors. And they had, for years and years, they'd planned to do something that had never happened at our school, ever. And that was the trophy at state. And they did. They'd set a goal. They'd worked so hard to achieve it. And then 4 years later, group of five seniors got the state championship. Same thing. Had worked so hard. And travel teams and training year-round. And they set a goal, and they achieved it. And we will all carry those things around for the rest of our lives. And the idea of taking that away from kids, of stripping that dream from so many kids who have worked so hard, it's going to be a fight if they try to do it in our state. But that's now what the national CDC is recommending for our kids. No indoor sports and no sports where you cannot participate 5 feet or 6 feet apart. And again, none of that makes any sense. Why 6 feet? They said you can go to school with a 3 foot separation now. There's no evidence that kids in state after state, there have been thousands of high school basketball games played with no tracing of coronavirus to the participants or to their families. But now the CDC is just going to arbitrarily rip that up once again. It's disgusting. And there you have it. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world.
And coming up next, I heard a guest on Seattle's Morning News last week. And pretty much everything the guest said, I disagreed with. So you know what we do in a situation like that? We get the person on so we can hash it out on the air. Do you like the idea in your neighborhood of them taking out single-family homes and making them duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes? Windermere's chief economist says we should do that. I absolutely hate the idea. So he and I are going to hash it out next here on the Dory Monson Show. Last week, I heard on our radio station the chief economist for Windermere, Matthew Gardner, and he was talking about how Seattle has to get past the single-family zone mindset that it's had really for most of its existence as a city. And I have to tell you, I disagreed with almost everything I heard Matthew Gardner say. And when I disagree with somebody, I love to get them on the show so we can hash it out on the air. Windermere Chief Economist Matthew Gardner joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Matthew, it's great to talk to you this afternoon.
And you too, Dory. Hope you're doing well. I'm sorry I disappointed you.
You didn't disappoint me. I love people who disagree with me and who are willing to come on to hash it out. So I grew up in Seattle. I grew up in what was a distinctly single-family zoned neighborhood. And even though I didn't live in the greatest house, you know, my friends, we had backyards and we played wiffle ball. And it was a wonderful place to be a kid and wonderful place for most families. So why in the world is there this desire to upzone so much of Seattle and get duplexes and fourplexes and more apartments and all of that?
Well, I think that it's great to know that as a youngster, you had plenty of space around. The trouble is, we continue to have more people moving here than moving away. In fact, I mean, the last time we actually lost population, I believe, was after the Boeing bust of 1972.
Correct.
So a lot more people here, and naturally, we've got a lot of mountains, a lot of water, and not a whole amount of land. And because of that, as you said earlier, yeah, zoning has been around. I think zoning was created here back in the late 1930s, I believe, and mm-hmm. It made sense then. Probably did through the 70s. But as we continue to see more and more people moving here, as we continue to have a mass transit infrastructure, which is stretched beyond belief, then what that does is that it means that home prices or even rents closer to the job centers get higher. They do that because there's a value to our time.
Okay, so I agree with that. But there's another critical component to why we have some of the highest housing prices in the country. And that's the role that government plays. A Syracuse University study says Seattle city government adds more to the cost of housing than any city in the country. Why don't we address that? Why don't we address the overwhelming role, I mean, adding 33% to the cost of our housing just from our government? Why don't we address what the real problem is before we start, you know, chipping away at the character of the city?
Well, I mean, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it's as much as I say that we need to get greater densities, it's not going to happen overnight. And part of the reason, and you are quite correct in that, making the statement you just did, is our regulatory fees and costs. On average in America, it's about 25 cents of every dollar spent to build a home of fees. And actually for multifamily, either condominiums or apartments, it's above 30 cents. Mm-hmm. So when you combine those regulatory fees with the land costs, which are extraordinary, again, because we have a finite supply of it, then we look at labor costs. No one's going to vocational school. Then we look at material prices. Lumber's gone parabolic over the course of the last less than a year now. It's up 170%. So in all, it's very expensive to build. And that obviously means the home itself is going to have to be expensive. You are right. If we can try and get some of these fees down, would that help? Absolutely.
Right, but there will be no motivation to get the fees down if we just say, let's take this single-family home and make it a fourplex. And I'll give you an example, Matthew. Right across the street from our radio station, there was a single-family house that's been there for decades and decades and decades. And a few years ago, they knocked down that house and they put up an apartment building. Units are about 200 square feet, and there are 40 units. 40 units where a single-family house once stood just a few years ago. And I don't think that's good for anybody. I think that it's depressing. I've been to Europe, and I've been to many cities in Europe where everybody lives in this communal-type setting, and I find that incredibly depressing.
Well, yes, it's in the thing about it this way. We've got a population here in Seattle of about 800,000, I think, last time I looked. You mentioned Paris. The population of Paris is about 2.2 million. The difference is you can fit the whole city of Paris into North Seattle and a bit of Kirkland. So, yeah, they do have density now. You can think that that's depressing or not, but it clearly works there. But ultimately, I think we need to figure out at some point, how do we address housing affordability? Because this is the big issue. If we do not do it, then at some point, companies who are thinking about growing into our region, growing into our city, well, there's two things they think about. One is there a talented workforce I can hire? Well, we are wicked smart here. We've got that covered. But the other part, more importantly, is how much do I have to pay people? Biggest component of salaries, cost of living.
Sure.
So unless we address it, then all of a sudden cities like Spokane, Boise, Idaho, even Las Vegas, Nevada, become more attractive. Why? Well, you can buy your wonderful single-family, brand-new, never-lived-in house for $350,000.
But then the question becomes,
buy a shoebox in Seattle for that.
All right, but then the question becomes, what should our motivation be? Should it be purely economics, or should it be quality of life? And you know, as I said, I think this push toward communal living and every time you go outside, it's going to be in a public space. I don't think that's good. I don't think it's healthy. I think those of us who, you know, love our neighbors, but I like the fact that I don't see any of my neighbors from my deck. I like that a lot. And I think there are some quality of life issues that are going to go away if we purely push for greater density, more housing. It's just we're losing the character of what was a great city.
And I think that we don't like change. And I think it's wonderful that you are in a situation that you have that house, and you've got that space. But think about people coming in. Then let's start thinking about that wave of millennials who are turning 30 in massive numbers.
I have three daughters in that age range, and they are all desperately looking for their first house, and it's really challenging right now. I get that. Believe me, I get that.
One in your neighborhood. So, and you're right. And in fact, you mentioned city council, and it's true. But as recently as the 1970s, Seattle actually had a far less single-family zoning than we do today. So they've actually expanded it significantly by restrictive zoning classifications, all these kinds of things. So you've actually taken more and more of that developable land away. Now, ultimately, my suggestion is let's start thinking about density. Some people think that I've got a goal of multiple high-rises, something looking like Hong Kong, and I don't. But I think that at some point we need to start seeing, looking at what we have. We've got about 40 square miles of land in the city that you can build on, of which only 10 miles of that is for apartments or townhomes. So it's a very small amount that is currently allowed to occur. Now, ultimately, are we going to see a massive change overnight? No, we're not. And that's where the economics comes into it, because we've got very little developable land.
Right.
So what you need to see happening, and I think you kind of mentioned it earlier on, is that in order for a project to make sense, you've got to buy a home or a couple of homes, tear them down and rebuild on them. Well, they've actually, I live on Queen Anne, they've done that around the corner. But because of the cost of those falling down homes was so high, they replaced them with several townhomes. But even they are remarkably expensive, again, sure, because of that that land availability.
Okay, well, last thing for you, Matthew. And I think you're a very bright guy. I've heard you speak at a public event, and you're a very good guy for coming on with me. But I have to ask the question. You work for Windermere. You have a company that would benefit tremendously if we had an explosion in the inventory of housing, whether that be in the form of duplexes or triplexes or fourplexes or whatever. How do I trust your motives on this?
And that's a very reasonable question to ask. I call it the way I see it. I mean, I can go back to 2006 and I was jumping and leaping about housing bubbles, but no one would listen. Now, it's you can say, would it be good for the company to have more supply? Well, yes, but I think I tend to look at it on the bigger picture, and that is, how are we going to keep up not just the vitality of our city, but our growth? We have been very, very lucky for over a century to have the companies formed here that have chosen to stay here, and we've kind of sat back and enjoyed that. But at what point will that change? What point are we going to become so exclusive and so expensive, people are going to go somewhere else?
Yeah, and if that happens, I don't mind that idea.
The city or the region.
I don't mind that idea of people going elsewhere if it retains some character. But I love this conversation. I really appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon, Matthew.
You are always more than welcome, Dory. It's
okay.
Been fun.
Thank you, sir. All right, Matthew Gardner, Chief Economist at Windermere. What do you think? Do you like the idea of upzoning and of turning what is single-family neighborhoods into multifamily zones? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Text me at 98973. That's 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show.
And it's usually quiet now. Our mom, she's so house proud. Nothing ever.
Breaking news for you. As the Dory Monson Show rolls on, the Seattle Seahawks as a team have just released a statement. Now, let me give you a little background on this. NFL teams can start phase one of their three-part off-season conditioning program or training program on Monday, this coming Monday. They do strength, conditioning. The coaches can have meetings with the players. Well, the Seahawks have just announced that they will not participate in the voluntary off-season training program. Two NFL teams have announced they're not going to do it, the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. And here's what they said in a statement they just released. For the protection of everyone's safety, we, the Seattle Seahawks, are deciding to exercise our collective bargaining agreement right to not participate in voluntary in-person workouts. While many states in this country are still seeing rising COVID-19 numbers, we believe that a virtual off-season is best for everyone's protection. Our hope is that we will see a positive shift in the COVID-19 data that will allow for a safe return for players when mandatory workouts are set to begin. Not a good sign. in my view. It's a sign of a team, and you know, my sources are telling me that 85% of the players want to do these off-season training program. They want to get stronger. They want to get better conditioned. They want to learn what the coaches have to teach in these meetings. But it's players who are making, you know, more than $10 million. You know, Dwayne Brown, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, they're the ones who don't want to risk, you know, the massive amount that they are making. But if other teams are doing this, then, you know, this is where a certain culture starts to take root. And if your focus is not on being a champion, if focus is not on doing everything you can to defeat your competition, then you're probably going to get passed by your competition. And so for the Seahawks now is an entire team, but again, my sources tell me that it's being driven by the wealthiest players with the biggest contract on the team. And of all of the other players, they want to start collecting, you know, some weekly paychecks and a per diem and all of this other stuff that you get once you show up at training camp. So the wealthy players seem to be driving a holdout or a demand for a fully virtual phase one of the off-season program. Not a good sign for a team that says they want to be back as Super Bowl champions. Okay, just got that in. Wanted to share it with you. Keep posted on all that and all the other news of the day. As after we check the news, we'll get to the big lead at 2. Coming up next, Dory Monson Show. Rolls on.